little darling. The smile will return to the faces now.
So hey everybody, welcome to Voices from the Front Lines. This is Eric Mann, and we have an interesting show today. The main guests on the show are going to be two women from the Dyett High School hunger strike. Last week we heard G2 Brown, and they were in their 34th day of the hunger strike that's in Chicago. Today we're going to be talking to two parents, Jeanette and Anna, who are hunger strikers, just coming off. They ended the hunger strike. They didn't end the campaign. We're going to find out what happened, what they tried to get out of the Chicago Board of Education, what they didn't get. And then we're going to go to the phones for a while. Basically, the show's a lot about people. It's called Voices from the Front Lines. And these are two parents who have been on the front lines. And it's hard. It's hard to have a campaign and try to win things. We're on the phone with both Jeanette and Anna. Are you both on the line with us?
Yes.
Great. Very proud of both of you. We've been following it. I know G2 Brown the most. But Jeanette, what is your last name? I'm sorry I wasn't sent it and I read about you.
Taylor Lamar.
And yes. Anna?
Jones? Yes.
Okay. Starting with you, Jeanette, were you on the hunger strike?
Yes.
How are you feeling?
I'm okay. I can't really say that my body is back to normal, but I'm okay. That's the only, my spirits are well, but physically I'm not the same. I don't think I would ever kind of be the same.
No, I mean, hunger strikes, the reason people don't go on hunger strikes a lot is because they're very, very taxing on the system. And so thank you for doing that for all of us. What do you think, what did you get out of it? What are you feeling now? Let's start with just what happened at the end. And then we're going to get to how you feel about it. But just tell our listeners, this is Dyett High School in Chicago. We've been following it. It is a black, predominantly black high school. There's been a tremendous fight over its future. There's been a lot of issues of community control of the school. There's been issues of what kind of school they want to have. Maybe the first question is, why did you do this?
When you play by the rules of the district and you realize the game is rigged, you stop playing the game. And so ultimately, we stopped the strike because we realized Mayor Rahm Emanuel would have allowed us to die, ultimately. He would have allowed us to die. And so everybody on the hunger strike, our parents, teachers, and community members who do real work in the schools, and so we owe it to the young people we're fighting for to continue our services for them. And so that was the main reason why we said we would give back our strength to go on and continue fighting and do what we do for our young people in our neighborhood.
Oh, I totally agree with that. I mean, I wasn't in any way questioning why you ended the strike. I mean, one of the things we know is when we do things like hunger strikes and sit in, we assume sometimes that there's a morality on the system's part. And I think what you saw, as you said, is Rahm Emanuel would have let you die, but I think you still called the moral question. Where do you see the movement going from here, Jeanette?
I see that black and brown people around this country are going to start to raise up. And so the hunger strike has woken the sleeping giant. We now understand what we have to do to fight privatization and top-down policies that are implemented on our communities and block out parent voice. A lot of the people on the hunger strike have children in school, and we just want a voice at the table. Parents in Lincoln Park and High Park don't have to protest, go on a hunger strike, or go to jail to have their voices heard. Why do we?
Anna, how you doing?
I'm okay.
This is Eric Mann. I'm the host of Voices from the Front Lines. We're really happy you're out. This is a show in Los Angeles, but it is listened to all over the United States. We also have a website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, that you yourselves will be able to listen to your own show. In about 2 days, you'll be able to download it and hopefully have parents and students and teachers and community people listening to your interview that you just did. So, again, how are you feeling physically to start?
I'm a little weak, but I spoke to my doctor today, and I got some vitamins and supplements, and he said I'm doing okay for the moment.
Well, again, thank you for doing it for everybody, not just for yourself. I mean, it is a sacrifice, and it's very much appreciated. What did you learn out of this? I mean, I'm sure this has been a very... How many days were you on hunger strike?
34.
Wow, wow. It's almost hard to comprehend. What changes did you go through?
As far as my family, I've had to... first of all, I've taken my three younger... I have four children. I'm a single parent. I've taken my three younger children out of the school. CPS because of the lack of resources and the disinvestments that the schools are receiving. So I've had to basically been forced to homeschool my three children with no resources and no information from CPS as to where I can get resources from. I needed to go on this hunger strike because I have a ninth grader who travels 11 miles out of the school district to go to school. And so what I've learned in this hunger strike is we don't have choices. Black parents are not valued. We have over 4,000 people who chose to die in global leadership in green technology, and we still have no respect. Black parents have no choices at all.
I notice, May, do you perceive black people in the United States as a nation, as a separate people? Do you see yourselves as part of the United States, as separate, as both? How do you, based on this experience, I'm just asking how your own consciousness is about what you think the United States thinks about you, and what do you think about the United States?
Well, I see us as not being valued. I see us not being worth an investment, although we pay state and local tax.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the question is, do you plan after this to be politically active?
No.
We're already politically active. We vote.
But you joined a movement, right? I mean, you were part of... did you see yourself when you went through the hunger strike as part of a movement? I'm just trying to understand. I'm not questioning. I'm trying to understand your own perception. Did you see yourself as part of a broader movement? What did you join an organization? Did you do it as individuals? How did you understand it?
We were already part of the oldest African American organization in the city of Chicago, Kenwood Oakland Community Organization.
Right.
And it's an organization who was headed by Jesse Jackson. He was the first ED, and it's the only space that a lot of us on the south side of Chicago have to help us organize around housing, employment, food, and youth development. And so we were already a part of that organization. That organization, for me, taught me a lot of things about being on local school councils and working with other schools. And so that was a step that we were already making. But I want to go back to the point of what you said. How do you feel as a person? I feel like Cecil the Lion is more valuable than I am. Yeah. I feel like nobody. I feel like I don't belong in the country. I woke up every day believing that people's moral compass would kick in and say it's wrong for them to go hungry for something that's a human right. And so I don't see myself as part of the nation. I see myself as a third-class citizen who does not belong here. That's what I felt during this hunger strike. But I also saw that a lot of people who weren't affected by this issue gave us empathy and sympathy. And so people from around Chicago, from around the country, supported us, sent water, sent donations, sent solidarity letters, sent solidarity videos to say that they support us and they understood. Because let's make no mistake, what's happened in Chicago has happened in Philadelphia, it's happened in Baltimore, it's happened in New Orleans. And so everywhere that they are, the majority are black and brown people, it's happening. And so it also sent me a message that nothing for us is ever going to come easy, and the fight does not stop with diet. That is just a moment in the movement.
Well, you know, for a lot of us, I was involved with the Congress of Racial Equality and student that I work with, not as part of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I work with the Black Panther Party. During that period in history, we came to feel that the United States was an empire. We felt that only a revolution was possible precisely because most people that become revolutionaries don't start that way. You know, they start by just trying to win a thing or change a thing. They get organized, they go, they have a meeting, they sit down. And if the system is decent, I'll be honest with you, if the system treats people decently, they tend to not be interested in revolution, right? I mean, most people just want to maybe get a better job or get. But over time, the cruelty, as you were saying, and the obvious disrespect for Black and Latino families led a lot of us in the 60s to realize that the whole system had to be changed. You know, it had to be even overthrown. And so a lot of us joined revolutionary organizations. Do you think a revolution is possible in the United States? Do you think it's necessary?
Of course.
And do you think it's possible?
It's so obvious. Look what's happened in Ferguson. Look what's happening in Camden, New Jersey. You're starting to see people say enough is enough. And so the revolution will be televised. And slowly but surely, we've woken the sleeping giant. It's 2015, and people have decided to starve their bodies and literally die for education. And so you're starting to see the revolution rise. And so while you're absolutely correct, a lot of us got into it to want to make change, but you're pushed to go to a new level. You could only go to so many meetings. You can only be arrested so many times. The hunger strike was the ultimate sacrifice for a lot of us. And so what I hope started happening is people just all over the country start to say, I'm going on a hunger strike to show these people that you can't do what you want to do to Black and brown families, and also change who we vote into office. That's a big part of the problem. A lot of these elected officials get in on the promise of they'll help promote what's best for everybody in the community, then they get in there and forget. And so we got some work to do in Chicago with getting rid of a lot of these elected officials and getting our people to understand the importance of voting.
Yeah, I would say also that some of them don't forget. Some of them never went in the first place to do what they promised. You know what I'm saying? That I wish they only did forget. But I agree with you. I totally agree with you about the number of fronts. Anna, what are your next steps? And what are your next steps in terms of the changes you want to make in your own life, if any?
Well, my next step is to continue the fight to get our vision inside of the Walter H. Byard High School. And to also, the city's school board is appointed by the mayor, so we need to have an elected school board. And we just need to continue to get our representation on the design team for Walter High School. So I'm going to continue the fight for equal accessible education.
Listeners, we're at 818-985-5735. Why don't you start calling in, but you're only calling in to talk to Jeanette and Anna about the work that they're doing. In other words, you're going to call and directly talk to them. You're going to ask them questions. You're going to hopefully offer some solidarity for them. You know, let them know that there's people out there listening. 818-985-5735. You're on KPFK. We are very short of people. G, the magical engineer, board operator, is going to take the calls, but we're going to go slow, and we're going to have a conversation. 818-985-5735. If you want to talk about Black community, community control of schools, if you want to talk about the struggles that people are having in the hunger strikes, if you want to talk to these, you know, these real civil rights leaders who we're listening to on the phone right now, 818-985-5735. That's the only thing you're calling for, is to talk to them, to offer solidarity, and yes, to ask any questions or have any short comments, okay? So as we continue, I've known G2 Brown for a pretty long time. He's still younger than me, but he's one of those long-standing movement veterans, you know, those of us who have a sense of history. And what's it like working with G2?
I've worked with G2 since 2007. I met him at a LSC training, a local school council training. And I had been on the local school council for a long time, but was not clear about my role on the LSC. And when I went to the first meeting, the question he asked was, do you know what your responsibility is for LSC? And my honest assessment was to co-sign what the principals say. And Brother G2 was like, no, do you know you hire and fire the principal? And I was like, I do. And so from him, I learned a lot about being on local school councils. And so my first real work with him was when in 2008, when they tried to close my elementary school. And I wasn't sure. I wanted to fight, but wasn't sure how. And he hasn't left my side, and I haven't left his side since.
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting is, you know, they always talk about, why can't Black youth and Latino youth read more, and why can't they do this? But what I found is that the best government classes are in the movement, the best reading classes, the best art is in the movement, you know what I mean? Because the system is not going to teach you how to overthrow it. The system's not going to teach you how it really works. It's always somebody like G2 who's going to pull you aside and say, listen, I know what you've been trained to think, but let me tell you a different point of view. And my experience has been when most people are exposed to that point of view, the second they hear it, they understand it's true. You know, it's like, it's not like a long conversation. It's like, oh, of course that's true. In fact, I was even thinking that, but I wasn't fully aware of it until I heard another person say it. Anna, has that been your experience? And have you worked with G2?
I have worked with G2. As a matter of fact, I met G2 right around the time of the school closing. Swami Emanuel decided to close 49 schools in black and brown neighborhoods. And I just happened to be at Kenwood Oakland Community Organization. And I heard G2 Brown speaking. And it humbled me so much because I thought that I had nowhere to turn with regards to the hardship that the closing of the schools caused me. So when I met the Kenwood Oakland Community Organization is where I met the Coalition to Revitalize Zion High School, and they were working on a project with educators and community leaders and parents and students of a plan which was requested by the board when they wanted to keep the school open last year. So they asked people to make a request for a proposal, which is what the coalition were working on. And I was proud to be a part of someone asking me my concerns as a parent of what I wanted for my child, because they had lost so much with the aftermath of the school closing. So I've been working with G2 ever since.
Well, you know, Rahm Emanuel, and we're at 818-985-5735 if you'd like to talk to both Jeanette and Anna from the Kenwood, how do you say the name? I should know it. It's only famous, but say it again. Kenwood Oakland
Community Organization.
Right, COCO, right? They call it too?
Yep.
Yeah, it is famous. And why do you think, you know, what was the woman from, I'm embarrassed, but what is Karen's last name who was from the president of the teachers' union who was going to run against Lewis, right?
Karen Lewis.
I think it was one of the most devastating developments that she got sick, because I think Rahm Emanuel is such a sick human being, and I think she could have beat him. And I think it's a major setback because she's such a heroic figure. I was going to go work on her campaign. In trying to deal with Rahm Emanuel, I mean it, have you ever met a sicker human being?
We haven't either.
Right? I mean, what's this man's... I mean, this is... He's from another planet, and not a good one.
He's accountable to the bankers. He's a businessman, and so he runs the city as if it's a business. And so we're talking about a person who never came into the black community until it was election time. And so it's just really doing voter education. It's one thing to do voters registration, but really voter education. Have people really know who they're voting for and what that person's interest is in running your city and who will he stand for. And so he's not embarrassed. He cares about his national platform. He really doesn't care what people in the city think about him because he got voted back in. And he had a fight. Chuy Garcia gave him the fight of a lifetime. And history is going to repeat itself. The only difference is he's going to lose this time because you don't allow black and brown parents to starve themselves and think they're unworthy. And all we really wanted from the mayor was a conversation about what's worthy in our neighborhoods. And so Karen is still fighting. Karen came out to see us a couple of times on the hunger strike. She is still with us. She's still fighting the good fight, even through her illness. But yes, even through her illness, she is still fighting. And so people are going to see who Rahm Emanuel really is. It was obvious at his budget hearing. He's talking about the biggest tax increase in history in the city of Chicago because he doesn't want to pay the very people who sit in front of our young people, our teachers. He doesn't want to do what the city is supposed to do. He doesn't want to provide services to black and brown people. They're building new Chicago. That's not for people like me. And so he has to answer for that because that's not what Chicago is. That's not what Chicago is built or based on.
We got a call from Manuel in Los Angeles. I'm hoping it's the Manuel I know well. Are you on, my brother?
I do. Yes, my brother. I'm here.
What are the questions you have for the two sisters from Chicago?
Well, I just want to say, my brother, is this. I heard one of the questions that you asked one of the sisters before, okay, whether she considers herself to be a nation of people. And so I want to ask, she didn't quite understand the question. She didn't answer the question. And I just want to answer that, if I may.
No, I don't want you to answer their question. I want you to ask them a question, if that's okay. But say what you got to say. You're on the air. Let's hear what you have to say. Sure.
What I want to say is this, you know, that yes, we so-called black people and brown people, we are the same race of people, whether they know it or not. And yes, we have gone through many trials and tribulations for the past 400 or 500 years. You cannot deny that, okay? And yes, we are a nation of people. When you read in the book of Zephaniah, chapter 2, verse 1, the Lord said, gather yourselves together, O nation, not desire. Who is that nation that's not desire that the Lord said, gather yourself together? The nation of Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel. The real Jews of the Bible, which is us, the Hebrew Israelites.
All right, Mala, thank you so much. Anything you sisters want to respond to what he had to say, or we just want to move on? But no, tell me, what did you think of what he had to say?
Well, I understand him. I agree with him. We are one. But it's not us that has to be convinced of that. It's our 1% that has to be convinced of that.
That's right.
And so we're basically just trying to do what we need to do, what we know is right, what should be a common sense thing, and get proper education for our children, equal educational opportunity. We shouldn't be fighting for education in 2015. Our schools are still separate and unequal. So this is not a race thing for us. We have been discriminated against. I feel like we are good enough to pay taxes, but we're not good enough to make choices. So if that answers your question, I hope it helps.
Is anybody going to tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks? I got to try to figure out how to listen to any Twitter ideas. And, hey, here's something here. It says, this was for last week. It says, past Tuesday show, day 30 of Diet Hunger Strike, Hammer and Hoe, and a great conversation with Robin Kelly from Tanya Pinkins. Thank you. Rashad Jones and three other follow you. P. Gabriel Foreman favorited. Past Tuesday show, day 30 of Hyatt Hunger Strike, Hammer and Hoe, and a great conversation with Robin Kelly. I guess you're repeating the same thing. So my point is that people are out there, sisters, listening. I don't still got this Twitter thing all too well. I try to act like what I'm talking about, but I say tweet and twat and whatever. You know, I do. I act like I'm supposed to be very current. But do tweet me at Eric Mann Speaks, and I'm getting to that. People are listening. Tell me any conversations about the students. How did the students respond? I want to say again how impressed I am with what you did. I know how lonely it is. You know, I was in solitary confinement for 40 days in prison for my political beliefs. I was in prison for 18 months. And you know what? At the end of the day, you're sort of by yourself. You know, I mean, even though everybody's saying right on, right on, it's a personal commitment you make, and it's a conversation with yourself. So I want to say how much I appreciate what you did. Did you have any insights, each of you, about yourself? I know you thought about the movement, your health, but with all that time on your hands, what else was going on in your mind?
For me, I got to see the big picture, how the dismantlement of housing, the closing of police stations, no grocery stores, how poverty is manufactured, to be honest, in my neighborhoods and how it's happening everywhere. A lot of times I always felt like I was on this island and it was only happening in my neighborhood and in my city and maybe at my school. But that's, I found that to be farthest from the truth. The same issues that we have in Chicago are some of the same problems they have in West Africa. It's just a different type of oppression. And so that was my clarity for me to connect the dots and really see that this is something, bad policies passed down are happening all over the country. And we have to take a stand to get those people out of office and really put in policies that promote education of our young people, that promote job readiness for young people, that promote working class folks.
And I'm going to hold off on you. You get the last word. I want to hear from Martha in Echo Park. Martha, how you doing? You're on with Jeanette Taylor and with Anna Jones. They're both.
Hi.
What are you thinking?
Hi.
I'm first of all, I'm a member of UTLA Los Angeles, and I just want to shout out to you guys and say there are so many of us who support what you've done. Teachers unions here are on the same side. I believe we are currently fighting our own version of Ron Emanuel here in Los Angeles, who wants to do to LA what Emanuel's done to Chicago, which is to, you know, charterize everything and send kids all over the school in search of their so-called choice. And I just applaud your work, your courage, and you are an amazing inspiration to us.
Thank you so much.
That means a lot, Martha. How about you, Morris? What's up?
Hello. How you doing, my friend?
All right, Morris. Tell us what's on your mind.
Okay. What do you call a person that is inhumane? A corporation. And they are responsible for most of the ills that most of the people of the world are feeling today. Your boy Emanuel is a corporate prostitute. That's your biggest problem. Mm. Thank you very much for taking the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for that clarity.
Joshua, what's up? Joshua, what's up with you?
Hello?
Yes. What's on your mind? You're talking to Eric Mann, Jeanette Taylor, and Anna Jones.
I wanted to say, yes, we have a problem with people who are seemingly robotic nowadays, and that's when we speak of people who have no compassion and stuff like that. And we talk about the 1%, we talk about corporations, and I would just say, yes, there are people running around right now who are basically soulless. We have to expose what's going on as far as people do need to pay attention and stop calling it conspiracy theories when someone says MKUltra, mind control, trauma-based mind control. Let's really get to the point. What's really going on behind the consciousness of humanity right now? And do some research, you know, look into it, because there's a lot more to it. These people are not even, they're not conscious of what they're doing because they've been programmed, you know?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, my brother. Well, my two civil rights heroes from Chicago, Anna, I think you're going to get the last word.
Well, I just want to say thank you for having us. And I also want to acknowledge that we have not yet completed our victory, but we do acknowledge that we have made many accomplishments. And one of which is last year we kept the school from closing, and that was the reason CPSX was the request for proposal. And this year we kept it from being privatized, and that was something against one of the most powerful Democrats that we know, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. So we have made some accomplishments, but we have not made a victory yet, which is to get our vision, that DIET Global Leadership and Green Technology curriculum, inside of Walter A. Stein High School, and then we'll be okay.
Well, one thing, and you are going to get another zero, but Dillion just did tweet me, solidarity with the DIET High School hunger strikers. Thanks. Thank you to them. So people are listening. One thing I want to ask both of you is that, you know, this show, Voices from the Frontlines, we call it our national movement building show, but we need your help. I'm talking about Jeanette and Anna now. We have a website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. We need you to get people in Chicago to register, to go on that site and actually put their emails on. We need, if Coco could put a bunch of signatures on there, you know, people would, not signatures, names and emails, because we put out a weekly email blast every Monday or Tuesday about the show. So just as you're now wanting, and we want people in Detroit and Philadelphia and you know, all over the country to listen to your cause, we need your people to be able to, if next week there's a group of people, as you said, from West Africa who need help, we'd like some people from Chicago to say, I listen to Voices from the Frontlines, not just because they had a great show about us, but because I want to build that show. So would you be willing after the show, since I'm an organizer, to sit down with some folks and figure out how to get people to put their emails on by go on the site, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, also to download the site, because within 2 days you're going to be able to go on the site and hear this interview and replay it. You could have a house party with people, say, let's come over and let's listen to this interview. So can I ask your help, just as we're asking yours, because you two seem like some very good organizers.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
All right.
Okay, I see it.
So I'm expecting to see a lot of signatures, a lot of on our website. Is that right?
Yes,
you are. I'm actually going to post this to my Facebook page once I've subscribed to it.
All right, well, the two of you are the first most important things. So, Anna, I told you you would get the last word, so you got the last word. What is it?
We need an elected school board, and we need to get Mayor Rahm Emanuel replaced.
Yes, we do, and I think we need to get the whole system replaced as well. Jeanette, you get 10 seconds for your last word.
Thank you for the support and the love we've gotten. Thank you for having us on your show, and just know that the fight continues.
Yeah, in Africa they call it La Luta Continua. I think that was in Portuguese that the Africans used that expression. So everybody, thank you. I learned a lot from Coco. Thank you to our brother G2 Brown.
Thank you so much.
Okay, great, and we'll stay in touch with you. So this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, KPFK, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, rather, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. You can tweet me, at Eric Mann Speaks. You can email me, eric@voicesfromthefrontlines. You can podcast it. If I knew how you podcast it, I would tell you, but we do have podcasts. You can get your friends to, would you go out now and just get 10 friends to go on the site and register, because that means every week when we put it out, there's people listening. So I'm going to do a commentary for you about dieting, weight, and my relationship to the Sizzler. So I'm on my latest diet. I generally do well with my weight. I've gone up and down a lot. So this is about the politics of dieting. My core conception is that America doesn't have an obesity problem. It has a depression problem and an oppression problem. And people who are both oppressed and depressed eat a lot, because food is fun a lot. Eating is fun, otherwise we wouldn't do it. And otherwise you wouldn't have all these restaurants, and you wouldn't have people talking all the time about food. I'm also a cook, not a chef, but a cook, a real good cook. I cook a lot. I love food. But I don't like gaining weight, but I do. So I'm presently, and I'm mad at myself. Really, I'm probably 20 pounds over where I want to be, which means I'm 20 pounds overweight. That's just a nice way of saying it. And I guess I'm announcing it partly because I am trying to be on a diet. So, you know, you always feel good when you think you're on a diet, except if it's your 37th diet. So you get a little depressed. So then when you're a little depressed about your 37th diet, you eat. So what prompted this, besides the fact that, yes, I'm trying to lose some weight and I do feel a little bit good about it, is I go to the Sizzler a lot. I like the Sizzler. First of all, I think its main reputation is steaks and burgers and fries. But it also really does have an excellent salad bar. And you can get salmon. You can get really good shrimp on a skewer, which have almost no... And they have a calorie count, which is great. And it does help me. You know, I look. The salmon I want is only about 350 calories. Salmon has a lot of fat, but it's very healthy, very great oil. So this is, imagine, and I'm 6'2", and I'm still 20 pounds overweight. So how did I get there? And then I'm going to talk about the sadness of people overeating at the Sizzler. And I think some people may be having 2,000 and 3,000 calorie meals. So if you go to the Sizzler, besides the fact it's also a lot of food for a reasonable amount of money, and just like Denny's and Sizzler, low-income families, they love to eat like everybody else. They don't have a lot of money. They have big families. And so going to a place where you just can eat a lot of food and hopefully have a long, long, long meal is a good thing, which is why in my office I work near Weston and Wilshire, and I work on Sundays. So when I go to Denny's on Sunday, oh, my God, the line is out the door. That place is, you know, your American diner. And in the neighborhood I work, which is, as I said, Western and Welsh, it's predominantly Latino and Korean, although there are black. As usual, there's no white folks, except me and a few other people from the Strategy Center. But basically, you don't see any white people in Los Angeles west of Fairfax, which is a whole other conversation we can get into. But so I'm at the Sizzler, right? So my little struggle in my very complicated life is I go to the salad bar, and if you've noticed Sizzler, it's got three different, it's like God created and the devil created three different lines. The first line, which is the one I go on, is the healthy line. And that, you start out with a spinach salad, a kale salad, both of which have dressing on it, but they're very nicely done. I love the spinach with strawberries and some kind of a vinaigrette. I use that as my base. Then I move through radishes and tomatoes, cucumber. So far, so good. Then I get to the blue cheese crumble, and I'm careful with that, but I probably have about 2 tablespoons of blue cheese, which we should check out the calorie count. I didn't get our producer, Channing Martinez, has done some calorie counts, which we'll get to. And then I have garbanzo beans, which I love. And then I get, you got to be careful, but I get these artichokes, but they're very deeply soaked in oil, and I got to figure out what their real calorie count is. Then they have a very good vinaigrette, which I use, but that has calories. And then I use olive oil, balsamic vinegar. Then I go over to the devil's temptation side, and all I get over there, which I'll tell you about, is jalapenos and salsa. And then I get salmon with steamed vegetables. So, oh, and then I also, because it's a lot of food, if they have the vegetable soup, I get a bowl of that. So a bowl of vegetable soup, pretty healthy salad, vinaigrette dressing, piece of salmon, and some vegetables that have almost no calories. And I'm 20 pounds overweight. So as I'm going on the salad bar, if you've ever been to the Sizzler, on the other side, like as you're walking the healthy side, right across is chicken wings, the most delicious potato wedges, a whole tortilla bar, pasta, and then on the other side of that, on the other side of the healthy salads, is potato salad and macaroni salad and all kinds of marshmallow salads. So I'm trying to do the straight and narrow so I stay away from the left errors and the right errors. I just stay straight on. I don't go near the chicken wings. I don't go near the fries. And then when I go to the soup, I'm such a good boy. I only drink the vegetable soup, but they have my favorite, which is New England clam chowder. So I'm over at the soup bar, and I'm taking my delicious vegetables and tomato broth, and this black woman, and most of the people at Sizzler are either black or Latino, and yes, very a heavy black woman, is eating the New England clam chowder, which you know is all fat, it's just delicious. That's why it's delicious, potatoes and cream. She looks at my soup, she says, that looks really good. And I said, it is. And I look at her soup and go, that looks really good. And she says, trust me, it is. And she's feeling guilty that she's not going to go get the vegetable soup, which has virtually no calories. And she then says, before I say anything, I didn't say anything remotely critical. She says, well, you know, you only live once. And then I thought, that's really sad. Because, especially because you only live once, we can't be carrying this amount of weight. We can't be drinking all this alcohol. We can't be eating, you know, the foods we eat, because especially because you only live once, do you want to get hardening of the arteries? Do you want to have a really painful, long death, a 15-year death? Do you want to have diabetes, type 1 or type 2 diabetes? Do you want to have all the weight and fat, cholesterol and high blood pressure and strokes and heart attacks? So when she said you only live once, I felt really bad for her, and I totally identify. And one thing is, I don't feel bad for other people out of some sense of superiority. I have once have been 40 or 50 pounds heavier, so I get it. I totally get it. But I was thinking, oh my God. Now, when you go to the Sizzler, I have seen a lot of black and Latino families, because that's the only ones I see. And let me tell you what they're eating. First thing is, they go to the salad bar, and they feel good that they had a salad. I won't go through all the different things. And then they put on, I swear, at least 3 or 4 major scoops of blue cheese dressing, which we estimate to have 100 calories and 11 grams of fat per tablespoon. And they could easily be having 5 and 6 tablespoons all over that. So that's a 600-calorie, 66-gram of fat salad. And that's not even counting all the stuff in the salad. Then 6 chicken wings of 500 calories, and we have the fat somewhere else. Then they get the potato wedges, which have about 200 to 250, and I think more, the numbers that Channing got. The clam chowder has 325 calories and 15 grams of fat. Oh, yeah, and the cheese toast, which is absolutely delicious. You got to have the cheese toast. No, I'm kidding. I always say no to the cheese toast. That has 235 calories and 20 grams of fat. Well, I haven't done the math, but 600 for the blue cheese dressing, 500 for the wings, you're up to 1,100. Potatoes, you're up to 1,300. The clam chowder, you're up to 1,600. The cheese toast, you're already at 2,000 calories. And that's before you go back for a second. Again, our producer, Channing Martinez, I asked him, well, what are the healthy numbers? So they say here, the U.S. Department of Agriculture recommends men consume 2,000 to 2,600 calories if they're sedentary, which is 2,200 to 2,800 if they're moderately active, and 2,400 to 3,000 if they're active. Then on women, it's, you know, and that depends on your size, of course, 1,600 to 2,000 if they're sedentary, 1,800 to 2,200 if they're moderately active, and 2,000 to 2,400 calories if they're active. Well, I know that most weight loss diets, I know it's hard, that you got to get under 2,000 calories, and they really need you to get around 1,400 or 1,500, which is very, very little. So if you take my lunch, the salmon is about 350. The soup has nothing. Check it out. The vegetables have nothing. And let's say that with the, you know, the blue cheese, which I'm no longer using, that maybe my salad does have another 400. So I'm having an 800-calorie lunch, which if I am careful and have two of them, that's 1,600 calories. That's pretty good. My point is, whatever the numbers are, I am very active. I run every day on a treadmill. I do have a trainer. I work out 3 days a week. Then I do sprints. Then I do yoga. I work out every single day on a treadmill. I do sit-ups, push-ups. I'm very strong. I'm in pretty great physical shape, and I'm 20 pounds overweight. My point is, I don't know what numbers they're talking about, but these calories are going to kill you. You know, I mean, whatever they say about calories, sedentary, I think we need a lot less calories. I can tell you because I probably do eat no more than 2,200 or 2,400 calories. I am very active, and I can't lose weight. So here's my punchline. Do I want to overthrow the Sizzler? No, I love the Sizzler. But this is about depression and oppression. What else is there to do in life for most people in the United States? You know, I was in the civil rights movement when there was a real revolution, when there was true community, where there were, you know, meetings of thousands of people. And yes, we were marching, which is very good exercise. I don't remember a lot of heavy people. I mean, Fannie Hamer was a little heavy, but there was no obesity problem. I mean, most people were thin to average weight. And yeah, there were some heavy people, but nothing like today. What else is there? You text and you eat. You have no friends. Not really. Maybe if you're in the church, you have some sense of community. The movement does not exist. I've been in quote, trying to build the movement for God knows how long. There's no real mass movements and mass meetings and that meet 5, 6, 7 days a week like the church does. The family is falling apart at the seams, despite all the theory that the United States puts out about the family. These families cannot hold the burden of all this illness, of all this poverty, of bad schools, as we listen to these parents who, you know, I'm not trying to be cute, but they went on a third. I just realized that, oh my God, they went on a 34-day hunger strike. I didn't even catch the irony. I mean, of people go on hunger strikes not to lose weight, but maybe that's why we were thinner in the 60s, because there was a lot more commitment, and there were reasons to not eat, and there were reasons to not eat in an abusive, in a self-abusive manner. But what are the reasons now? What would you tell a person, really? Well, you shouldn't do that because you're going to die. You shouldn't do that because you're going to get sick. You can't say to people, don't eat a lot because eating is not good for you. Don't eat a lot because the vegetable soup tastes just as good as a clam chowder. No, it don't. No, New England chant, you can't beat New England. It's pure fat. I'd love those chicken wings. I love chicken wings, and I do eat them sometimes. I like steak better than salmon. I get it. If you just ask me, what do I like? And I love salmon, blah, blah, blah. Some of my best friends are salmon. But we can't. I am very upset when they say the greatest problem is childhood obesity. No, my friend. The greatest problem is imperialism. The greatest problem is capitalism. The greatest problem is this country has lost all its moral bearings. The movements have been suppressed. The black movement in particular, which offered the greatest moral clarity, has been badly repressed and suppressed. The wage levels are unbelievably low and getting worse. The social services have been destroyed. People wake up in the morning and they're sad. And they go to bed and they're sad. And it's a miracle working with some of the young high school kids that we do. But, of course, we're working with the most active ones. There's very little obesity. And, yeah, these young people, they eat a lot of food, trust me. But there's a life. There's some reason. I'm not a, I'd be interested in studies. But I bet you if you're not depressed, your calorie count might even be similar and you would metabolize better, which somebody who knows more about that could tell me about. So here's my punchline. I think looking at people's eating habits is another indictment of capitalism. It's another indictment of the system. It's a sad, sad reflection of how sad and sad people are. And it's all the more reason we need to build a movement. It's all the more reason we got to get people in struggle. Because, very frankly, the revolution is not just to change some future society. The revolution is now. The revolution is good for your mental health. It's good for your physical health. I don't know a lot of revolutionaries who are going to go to the Sizzler and have 12 chicken wings and garlic toast and New England clam chowder and the fries and, I think I said already, 6 scoops of blue cheese dressing. I don't know a lot of revolutionaries because even those of us who like that stuff have some internal structures of constraint and restraint, because we have some internal happiness. But if you don't have any happiness and you don't have any hope, obesity is the least of your problems. And as that sad woman said, you only live once. I think the revolution has to be able to say to her, because you only live once, all the more reason to get involved, all the more reason to make the choices, to make the sacrifices. If you're even going to die early for the cause. Don't die early because you just stuffed yourself day after day out of profound sadness. You can ask people to make moral choices, psychologically sane and healthy choices, if we don't offer them a better political alternative. That's been my life. I've spent 51 years now doing it. That's what I wake up in the morning. And that's why my diet is going to work. So this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web on kpfk.org. I really want to thank Channing Martinez, the producer of Voices, for the tremendous work he did, including researching all the fat counts and calorie counts of all the food at the Sizzler, for staying in touch with the two, Jeanette Taylor and Annette Anna Jones. I want to thank G, who's just such a source of solidarity and comfort to me, on her work on the board and just knowing that she's there. I want to thank Alan Minsky. I want to thank KPFK. And let's get out of here. All power to the people. Talk to you soon.